It's Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickard.
And I'm Rob Ferris. You're with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up on Central Time, we talk about why Wisconsin is lagging behind the rest of the nation when it comes to women-owned businesses.
First, Wisconsin-based home improvement giant Menards settled a labor dispute yesterday with the National Labor Relations Board. The case stems from complaints that the company's employment agreements allegedly violated employee rights.
In just a moment, we'll be joined by Marquette Law Professor Paul Secunda about the impact of the decision on labor law. First, Rich Kramer joins us, WPR News reporter. He's covering this story. Rich, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Well, Rich, what prompted this labor dispute?
Well, there was a complaint filed by the Office and Professional Employees International Union, Local 153, that's based in New York. But basically, the complaint alleged that Menards was requiring employees to sign mandatory arbitration agreements. These kept workers from being able to engage in class action lawsuits or collective actions against the company. And there was another this was the major point, but another one was that the Menards company handbook stated that workers would not get merit-based raises if they engaged in certain protected unionization activities.
So this went before the National Labor Relations Board. And this is a settlement. This wasn't imposed, but there was the risk from Menards' point of view of a settlement being imposed on them. So what did Menards agree to do to settle this today?
They basically said that they would change their company policies. They would stop requiring the workers to sign this mandatory arbitration waiver. And they also would change the company handbook so that employees wouldn't be penalized for engaging in these unionization activities, one of which I thought was interesting. Employees would not get merit raises if they engaged in gossiping, which I guess is a protected union activity.
Now, the settlement has been reached. Have we heard comment either from the union that brought this to the National Labor Relations Board or from Menards itself?
Menards has not commented. I reached out this morning. There was also a press attempts yesterday evening to get comment from the company, and they have not done that. But the union says it's a major victory for workers. They say that this, especially from a company like Menards, which is pretty well known for being anti-union or working to try to stifle union activities, it's a major step forward.
Well, Rich, thanks for bringing us up to date on this.
Thanks for having me.
Now we'll bring on Law Professor Paul Secunda into the discussion. Paul is Director of Labor and Employment Law at Marquette University Law School. Paul, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me again. Always a pleasure.
Well, the SEIU, the union behind this, one of their representatives told Progressive Magazine that this decision, this settlement, was historic. Is this a big deal, do you think, in terms of labor relations?
I think it is because of the size of Menards. It operates more than 280 stores in 14 states. It has 45,000 workers that were subject to these employment policies, these employee handbooks. And basically, they're admitting that their anti-union stances were not consistent with what labor law requires. That's something you don't see every day.
This mandatory arbitration, the idea that collective actions couldn't be taken as part of, I guess, what employees had to sign to work there, is this something that's common in other businesses?
It's increasingly common. More and more companies, especially large companies, are having employees put into mandatory arbitration programs that says that to the extent that they have any type of dispute with their employer, they agree to arbitrate those claims, either individually or, more controversially, even when they have a class action. The reason that's problematic is because Section 7 of the National Labor Relations Act protects concerted activity for mutual aid and protection. And by not allowing employees to work together to improve their workplace with or without litigation, they're interfering with those labor rights.
Is this going to make it more difficult for other companies to do this? Will we see similar challenges to similar mandatory arbitration agreements?
They're already ongoing. And in fact, interestingly enough, the various trial courts and appellate courts that have heard these challenges are divided. Some support the NLRB's views that this is a violation of labor law. The Fifth Circuit down in Texas has taken the view that this is not violative of the labor law. I think this is heading to the Supreme Court of the United States because what we have is a split of authority among different courts. So this will eventually have to be decided decisively by the United States Supreme Court.
Paul, can you step back a bit and tell us what goes to a national relations or national labor relations board versus what just goes through the court system? What happens in each sphere of our system?
Sure. The National Labor Relations Board has primary jurisdiction over issues that come up under the National Labor Relations Act. That is the federal labor law that regulates private sector labor relations. So anything dealing with organizing, joining, assisting a union, collective bargaining, forming a collective bargaining agreement between a union and an employer, or any other type of what we call protected activities, which could include strikes, lockouts, boycotts, pickets, this is under the primary jurisdiction, which means the NLRB has the first crack because of their expertise and their experience in labor law. Usually by the time it gets to federal courts is as an appellate matter. That is, it's being appealed from the decision of the National Labor Relations Board to one of the appellate courts somewhere in the country, which is reviewing the decisions of the National Labor Relations Board.
Rich mentioned this other change that was made by Menards, the company, in this settlement. A company policy saying if you participated in collective activity or, I guess, trying to start a union, basically, you would not be eligible for merit raises. This doesn't meet national labor laws?
Well, the problem is that the various language, and Rich also mentioned that you couldn't have a questionable attitude or you couldn't gossip.
Yeah.
That sounds pretty harmless, but in fact, what has happened over the years is that employers have used that vague, arbitrary language to kind of ferret out union supporters, using those terms in order to get rid of the most active union members. And so what the National Labor Relations Board has said is, if you're going to have these policies, disciplinary policies in your employee handbooks, they have to be specific and cannot in any way chill potential union activity. So the concern here is that this merit pay eligibility notice that existed in the previous employee handbook with this language was chilling potential protected union activity from some of these employees.
Big picture, what's the balance these days in, say, a big retail chain like Menards versus collective bargaining rights? We've seen that swing up and down over the years, haven't we?
We have, and right now labor is struggling because of the types of workforce that they have. They tend to be transient. They're low paid. They're more concerned about making sure they get their paycheck as opposed to standing up for their rights and having voice in the workplace. So this is a significant win for the unions and these retail employees they seek to represent, because in the last few years, the number of employees who are either in unions or seeking to unionize in these retail industries has been declining.
Who's in charge of the National Labor Relations Board? Who appoints the members of that board?
The members of the board, of which there are five, are appointed by the president. And by practice, there are three members from the president's party and two members from the opposing party. So right now, if the board were full, it would have three Democrats and two Republicans. In fact, there's only four members on the National Labor Relations Board because of the political nature. And in August, we'll be dropping down to three. Three is the minimum number of people who can be on the board and still do business. There was a recent Supreme Court case that has said when you get down to two members, the National Labor Relations Board no longer has a quorum and no longer can hear cases.
Well, speaking of shorthanded boards, the Supreme Court itself is down one member. If a case like this went to the Supreme Court, we might well see a tied vote there.
Well, absolutely. We just saw that in the Friedrichs case dealing with so-called fair share fees with public sector unions. If Justice Scalia had lived a little longer, it's very possible that public sector unions could have taken a significant blow with regard to their ability to collect union fees. Of course, that case ended up 4-4, which led to the Ninth Circuit's decision upholding the practice being reinstated. Similarly, in these types of cases concerning labor rights, the Ninth Justice could be extremely decisive because you do have a division between those justices who tend to side with business and those justices who tend to side with the workers.
And Paul, as we wrap up, this Menards settlement we're hearing about today, it was a settlement. It wasn't an order imposed by the National Labor Relations Board. Does that mean it doesn't really set a precedent, or is this a board that doesn't really work based on precedent?
Well, first of all, it is a settlement, so it only applies to the parties who have signed the agreement, the NLRB and Menards. However, you're correct that the NLRB does not work like a normal judicial court in the sense that precedent is only followed to the extent that it is still consistent with existing labor relations. And because labor relations changes from decade to decade, the labor law changes from decade to decade. One obvious example would be with the use of social media. The labor laws had to change to deal with the use of social media for organizing and collective bargaining purposes. And so there's not as much emphasis put on previous case law when labor relations has changed in the workplace.
We'll leave it there for now, Paul. Thanks for joining us today.
It was my pleasure. Thanks for having me again.
That's Marquette Law School Professor Paul Secunda and WPR reporter Rich Kramer joined us earlier. We've been talking about the labor settlement between home improvement giant Menards and the National Labor Relations Board.